if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 160. This is our 2021 RBC Heritage and Austrian Golf Open tips and picks episode. Paul Williams and Barry O'Hanrahan join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this week's PGA and European Tour action. Good morning, gents.
Morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world-famous golf betting system website with our in-depth betting previews, masses of tournament stats and our predictor models, all available completely free of charge with no paywall. Please subscribe to this podcast and drive the popularity of the show. We're available on Twitter. Paul is at Golf Betting. I'm at Bamford Golf. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Plus, look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. Secondly, if you are in the growing band of YouTube listeners, please subscribe and like the show. We had 1,000 listeners to the podcast last week on YouTube for the Masters, which is one of our highest numbers ever. So if you're listening on YouTube, please subscribe and like the show. That's really important. Right, a couple of reviews here, gentlemen, for us. 5 stars and love the theme song. Fantastic show with expert tips that are well presented by Steve, Paul and Barry. All tips are backed up with a fully comprehensive review of statistics, but also a nice mix of tips from the heart. Myself and fellow golf addict friend Marty meet every week in the pub to go over tips and put our weekly bets on. A favourite part of the show for us is the theme song. Its catchiness summed up by Marty inadvertently whistling the tune as he putted in for a birdie on the 17th hole last week. Keep this is great. Keep it up, gentlemen. 5 stars from Paul and Marty. And it all makes sense when I read the location out. Adelaide, Australia.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, how can you be having a chat down the pub at the moment?
Unbelievable. Well in, lads. Enjoy that.
Yeah, that is cracker.
I like that. Marty betting on his own pudding. It's so good.
And second one, Bermuda Grass Shorts is the title. 5 stars, brilliant info. Saves me wasting my week trying to get my head around all the different grasses. I'll put my hand up for that one. Courses and form, so I can throw my money away. Now I can listen for an hour or so, digest the three lads' great informative opinions. Then I can decide to ignore them. Good idea. And stick a pin in my phone and pick Paul Casey again. Seriously, though, 5 stars is not enough for this podcast. That is from G-U-Tubga. Yeah, that's a strange one. G-Y-T-U-T-B-G-E. And he is in the UK. Brilliant. Thank you very much for those two really good reviews. Much appreciated.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, lovely to hear the feedback. Thank you.
Please keep them coming. Absolutely paramount. Really, really looking for some more reviews. Of course, UK, America, Canada, Ireland. We had some a good number of Irish reviews a couple of weeks ago. Also, Australia. If you are an Australian listener, and I know there are lots of you down there, please throw us a 5-star review. Right, it's a busy show. It's a packed show. We try and keep it to just over the hour. We need, of course, to talk about the 2021 Masters. So I'm going to throw it out to you two guys. We were just having a chat off mic. What were your main takes from Hideki Matsuyama's, I'll classify it as a shock victory. Was it a shock to you two?
It don't know if the word shock's right, because he's clearly a world-class player. We've seen what he can do at WGCs. It just wasn't on my radar, wasn't on many people's radar, I don't think, to win this week, or the week just gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. It's not a shock at all that he won a major, and even more so that it was the Masters. You know, TJ Green, magnificence is requested there if you want to win, and you don't need to be incredible at putting, and that's just Hideki to a T, as we've known him through his career. He pulled it all together and played awesome. I'd love to know what he watched on his phone in the hour rain delay, because that's what he did. Where other guys were, I don't know, range hanging around or whatever, and he goes back out and blitzes, just blows the tournament apart on the on his back nine on Saturday. So it was brilliant. It was great to watch. A shame that we didn't catch a pretty juicy price on a very talented golfer, but because all my bets decided to tank and get out of contention very, very early in the tournament, I was able to actually watch and enjoy the tournament without rooting for particular things to happen, which was kind of unique and nice.
Takes the emotion out of it, Barry, doesn't it? So, but we know what he can do. You know, cool. I backed him back at Firestone when he won, 2017? It was his last win, wasn't it? The last time we saw him in that kind of take apart a world class field like that, and he was absolutely incredible that week, particularly on the final round. And as you said, when he came back out from the rain delay, it was a different story. He was just unstoppable, and just about held it together as he was coming down the stretch. But good enough at the end of the day.
You wonder what it was. Was it just the tiny bit of softening of the greens just made his really good iron play stand out that little bit more and enable him to separate a little bit from the field? You pop a few putts on top. Obviously, you need to make putts, but some of the iron shots he hit in that stretch of golf were just outstanding. It all worked out great in the end. It got a little exciting. I guess we'll get to that in a little bit, but...
Yeah,
fair play to Hideki. Do you think Hideki goes on to win another major or more majors now? Now that he's broken that pressure barrier.
Well, listen to this. This might answer the question. We've always said on this podcast, and I'm a firm believer, Hideki Matsuyama on Bermuda grass greens is a big no-no. I know he won the hit and giggle at Tigers one year, but in a proper golf tournament, he's won six times now on the PGA Tour, including, of course, the Masters. Five of those victories have come at Muirfield Village, two at Phoenix, one at Shazam, the HBC, World Golf Championship, and, of course, now the Masters. Three of those bent grass greens. Those Phoenix wins are the Bermuda grass with the velvet bent grass overseeded on the top. And then he's had one of Firestone Poana greens. So you could effectively say five of those victories have all been on bent grass putting surfaces. And I think for majors, we do tend to see a lot more Bermuda grass, a lot more bent grass greens in play upstate in America. So with his game, he's got the whole package, isn't he? It's just a lot of it with Hideki has been recently, and this is what really put me off him, was his driving's been sort of wild. And it was wild at San Antonio the week before. And then he finds something on the range or finds something in a practice round at Masters. And all of a sudden, his approach play was good anyway. And he's around the green game. He was third for around the green at San Antonio. The one sign that I did miss was that he... I think he was tied third after day one at the Valera the week
before. Yeah, he was. 67 or something he shot.
Did what Hideki's been doing recently. He just disappeared off the leaderboard and you just said, Hideki hasn't got it.
The season, one of the things that we were looking for was at least a top 10 for the year to date. And he'd had plenty of starts and hadn't mustered a top 10. Would have come 15th or thereabouts at the...
Bay Hill, I think.
Yeah, the WGC, the concession, I think he was in that kind of position as well. But
two of them.
Other than that, you'd have had to have been a Hideki truther, I think, to really pick him out and to you know, to stick with him this week. He was in the right price point. You know, we talked about the price points being in that kind of 50-1 give or take bracket. What was he, 45s, I think he was. So price wise, juicy mid price winner for the Masters, which often happens. But yeah, I wasn't anywhere near him, I must say. Disappointing for me was Spieth. I backed Spieth before the Valero had finished at 16s, and I think Spieth realistically would be disappointed that he didn't win that last week. He had his chances. His first for greens in regulation, which, you know, we talked about how his approach play had been so much better recently. And bizarrely for Spieth, it was those kind of 6, 8, 10 footers that you'd expect him to make, or make his fair share of, that really let him down. From, I think it was it the 18th on Saturday where he missed a kind of 6, 7 footer, and then he missed a whole host of them at the start of Sunday as well. And it only takes, you know, 2 or 3 of those to have dropped, and he'd have been at the minus 10 point. And, you know, had someone been that little bit closer to Hideki coming down the stretch, then it could have been a different story, I think.
That was the thing, wasn't it? Like, the pressure, not to jump off speed, but like he probably should have won in realistically with the setup he gave himself to get, you know, being on the greens and better than anybody else. The pressure never came on to Hideki early enough, or for long, or for sustained enough periods of time.
No, I know. Clear at one stage on the back.
I know he got like caught super early on in his round. He was only one ahead after he had played his first hole, but immediately stretched it back out again. And, you know, when he got through the fifth, when it looked like he was definitely making a bogey after going into the bunker, he made par there. Now, I'd say that was just, that probably felt like he saved a shot or maybe even two. And he probably felt like on cloud nine at that stage. And then nobody really got to the pressure point until Xander did on 15, after 15, and that pressure lasted all of 3 to 4 minutes, you know. And it was, I guess that's the only kind of lament I might have about this week, is that everything looks a lot closer now at the end of the day, just looking at the leaderboard. But there just wasn't that like riveting excitement throughout the day and the evening when you were watching it. To make it like a truly classic Masters, but you know it has all its own unique things that went on, and I mean, I don't think we're going to forget it for quite a while. It was quite a display by Hideki, and you know, Zalatoris went really well. That's a great story too. Man, he's good, isn't he?
Impressive.
First Masters, and just keeps going.
Kept
at it.
And he's not in the FedEx Cup rankings.
Oh, my God.
He's had a top 10 at the US Open and now second at the Masters.
He might be focusing a little bit of introspection on their process. They have to be. They have to have some way to enable somebody to,
yeah,
you know, upgrade their status throughout the year without getting that win.
I know having a PGA Tour card is it's defended, isn't it, rather than openly invited.
Yeah.
But you know, for players of the stature of Zalatoris, and we've had plenty in the recent past as well, you've got to have some kind of status where, you know, they're allowed into the FedEx Cup, because it's ridiculous.
I think he'd be some ridiculous ranking in the FedEx Cup if he had the points.
Points are top 10, did I read, or top 12?
Yeah. As Big Randy said on the No Laying Up podcast, those points are held as an IOU. So if he wins, they all get applied retrospectively, which is just mental. So like, if you're a top 30 player in the world, he'd be top whatever in the FedEx Cup, and he literally can't get into the playoffs unless he wins the tournament, I think.
That's right, has to win.
But you can have all the sponsor exemptions you want.
We had a very similar thing, Barry, although it wasn't as pronounced as Zalatoris, with Morikawa a few. Well, we've had it with Evan. We were Hovland, Morikawa, Matthew Wolf. You know, and we can go back to Jordan Spieth even. They literally have to win. They have to win one. Just to take you through some numbers, Spieth, as we were saying, 14th for driving accuracy, 75% of fairways. First for GIR, as Paul pointed out. 22nd for putts per GIR. That was the problem. He was third for total accuracy and ninth for ball striking. So that was a hell of a week for Speed, tee to green. I mean, if we had strokes gained data, I'm sure he was very close to the top of that particular category. From a ball striking perspective, John Rahm ranked number one, Xander ranked number two, Corey Connors was number three. He's turned into a real player, isn't he, Connors now? An absolute...
My, his putting must have been pretty poor then.
Across the week, he was 20th, but yeah, on Sunday, it was two putts, but it was probably even worse than two putts for GIR. But that's what happens with Corras. He's, you know, from off the tee, and his approach play is literally top five on the planet. It gets a bit scratchy then around the greens, and the putting is the huge weakness. But then you probably said the same about Will Zalatoris, and look what happened to him. So, but it was an interesting week. Interesting week all round. Also great to see Robert McIntyre get that birdie on 18 so that he's definitely got an invite, finishing in the top 12 and gets the invite back next year. It's interesting that 12th place, there was a tie. Stuart Sink, Brian Harman, Siwoo Kim, Robert, Kevin Na and Webb Simpson all tied for 12th. And all get an invite back to the Masters next year automatically. That's going to be so that, you know, being really anally attentive like I am, retentive, it's going to be a big field next year straight away because you've effectively got 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. There's 17 players there straight away into next year's field.
Plus your top 50 moves between the end of the year and the and then the past champions.
Well, certain years that would literally be 12 players, and straight away you've got that tie there. Yeah, it's 17 players actually finished in a tie for 12th or better. You know, McIntyre might not be a top 50 player. Harman might not be. Sink, very unlikely to be in the top 50 next year. So yeah. Interesting leaderboard, I thought. Tony Finau, what about him? Third for putting average, Tony Finau. And he was 50... He basically only hit 50% or just over 50% of greens.
See, you got to say he maxed out this week because, you know, the last couple of events, his long game has really looked off. And when that happens, I mean, you're not seeing him much on TV and then you're not really seeing his putting. And because he's not up there, you're not really paying too much attention to what he's doing stats-wise anyway. Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't notice if he's putting well. And then, for Tony to do that, watch out if he can figure out the long game.
Well, you know, get back to where it was. The long game will come back and he won't be able to make a putt or a chip.
that's another top 10 at the Masters and you know, another amazing. Major top 10.
Yep.
And, you know, in terms of his price ongoing, you know, the bookies will look back, punters will look back at his record and... You know, it looks like a sparklingly consistent record, which it is. And it just doesn't get close enough to win him. But, you know, if you'd have backed him 10 or 11 places last week, another payout from an each-way perspective at a major championship, which he's making a real habit of.
But you know what? You have to say there's another little string to his bow in that he has managed to get himself into a top 10 with a very different set of stats than he normally would bring to the table in getting a top 10.
Yeah.
He usually tee to greens it to pieces and then misses everything on the greens. And the fact that he's figuring out a way to score and get it there another way is, you know, it's building the skill set.
It's true.
So
his strokes gained around the green and strokes gained putting numbers would have been off the charts this week. By the way, we're only a few weeks away from the PGA Championship, correct?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Being played on a 7,900-yard golf course by the sea, par 72, featuring Paspalum. Tony Finau, only victory, Paspalum, Puerto Rico.
It sounds like Steve's only bet as well for the week right now.
Well, I'm doing what I usually do, which is just not listening to you two and looking at different odds and stuff. He is currently 4-0-1 with Betfair or Paddy Power to win the PGA Championship. He is as short as 28-1 with Bet365. I can feel Barry already on the phone, already getting onto Paddy Power.
Scrolling through.
Sweet talk on my bookie. Hey, baby.
Well, I got 40-1 for the US Open, didn't I? I got 40-1 on Finau for the US Open. 40-1 at the PGA. on a ridiculously long, the longest ever major championship golf course on Paspalham greens. And Finau, we know that, you know, Torrey Pines, he plays brilliantly by the coast. He's also, don't forget, that Shane Lowry's Open Championship victory, where was Finau? Was he third? I think he was third at Royal Portrush.
Ooh, let me get Googling. You keep talking there.
He was definitely in the top five, and that was a horrible, you know, typical, really hardcore links golf challenge.
40, he was third.
Yeah, 40 to 1 on a... It isn't a... Kira Island is just an American golf course that's located on the course, so... If he can find those, the driving and the GIR, that's a decent number, 40 to 1 for Fina.
And that's really achievable for him. Like, I mean, there's not an awful lot that can seemingly go wrong with the swing. Short back swing, you know, just rips through it. So you could definitely see him finding it, you know, very solid ball striking, an accurate ball striking back again between now and then.
Yeah. That's just a blip, I think, last week. You for don't expect to see that kind of numbers out of him, do you? In the 50s for those numbers.
For your insurance, for your each-way insurance, someone that you know is likely to get into the paying places, Finau is never a bad bet at a major. You know, he is T4 after all. Right, let's crack on. We've got lots to cover. I'm going to hand the floor to you, Paul. European Tour back in action this week. The Austrian Golf Open. Take it away.
Indeed, yeah. Yeah, it's nice to have the European Tour back for another stint over the next few weeks, hopefully. And another rejig of the schedule, isn't it? So the Austrian Open's slotted into the schedule this week. What we should have had, the Portugal Masters and then a couple of weeks at we should have had a couple of weeks in the Canary Islands, then the Portugal Masters, but the Portugal Masters has dropped off the schedule. They've slotted in the Austrian Open to fill the gap, and then they've pushed the two events, one at Gran Canaria and one at Tenerife, both along a week, so they're in the next 2 weeks following. The French Open, which should have followed after that at the Golf National, has been cancelled, so again, it'd be interesting to see what the European Tour will do, whether they try and fill that slot with another short-term or kind of hastily organised event or not. But we'll see.
They want to get it over here, don't they? They want to get some UK events going.
Yeah, we've got some later in the year. I guess it's the infrastructure and the whole setup that needs to be right. But clearly they managed to get a few going, you know, in relatively short timeframes last year. And
so as it stands, Austria this week, and then you've got two events over in Gran Canaria, in Gran Canaria, one in Tenerife.
That's it. And then the following week currently is a blank, but I wouldn't be surprised to see that filled with something else. And of course, they had another separate location in Austria they used last year, following this event in July. So they've got options out there, I think. So yeah, we'll see how it all pans out. But for this week, we're back to Austria. We're back to the Diamond Country Club, which we know and have seen a number of times back on the European Tour, which is good. We did eventually get a field out of the European Tour yesterday. There's a bit of confusion as ever as to what the field is, but we got there in the end. Thomas Detcher is the favourite, 10-1 with Unibet, generally 8-1. Interesting strategy that Unibet have taken this week, actually. They've gone longest price on Detcher over in Austria, and which makes all the rest of their prices particularly short. But if you do fancy Detry, then that's the place to go. 10-1 versus 8-1 generally. Sam Horsfield, 16-1. Justin Harding, 18-1. Matthias Schwab, 18-1. Kurt Kitayama, Rasmus Højgaard, and Martin Kaymer, 20-1. Josh Loughton, 22s. And then you're into the likes of Dean Burmester, Adrian Ause at 30-1. Sean Crocker, 33s and 40-1 bar those players. And as I said, we're back to the Diamond Country Club, which we've seen for a number of years. The Lyonnais Open was held here from 2010 onwards. We had the Shot Clock Open in 2018 as well. We had the Austrian Golf Open, which was the first event back after the COVID break last July. So there's plenty to review in terms of course history. And of course, you'll find all of that on the website on the event stats sheet for this particular week. The track's a 7,458 yard par 72. It's flat, it's exposed for the most part. But it's tough. It's a challenging track. And for me, greens and regulation has always been king here. Approach play has got to be the key to mastering this particular track. Slow, bent par and a greens. I think you'll find that the toughness and this kind of the speed of the greens is going to be potentially impacted by how this is set up this week and the conditions that we're likely to expect over in Austria. Because don't forget, normally in Austria, this event, when it is played, they tend to play it in the summer months. So it's nice and warm, it's 80 degrees, it's firm, it's fast. And Diamond Country Club plays the way it's intended. But the forecast for this week is horrible, potentially. With looking at sub 50 Fahrenheit temperatures, the mornings are starting off around about freezing. And you know, you're getting up to 5, 6, 7 degrees centigrade in the afternoon some days. Rain's forecast, sleet, snow's forecast as well. I can't remember the last time we had a European Tour event that was suspended for snow, but there's a potential for it to happen this week by the looks of it. 15 to 20 mile an hour winds as well on the Thursday, dropping a little bit, but can you imagine, you know, we've all played in some horrible conditions, and Barry, I expect you've played in some worse conditions than all of us over in Ireland, but it's not pleasant playing when it's barely above freezing, raining and blowing 15, 20 miles an hour.
Don't you weather shame us, Paul.
is that just a stereotype, is it?
No. It's very, very accurate, especially by the coast. You can get caught in some pretty nasty stuff.
It you know, it's not pleasant, isn't it? The players need to be prepared for it. They need to be comfortable playing in those kind of conditions. You need to be dressed for the occasion, cold hands, and it adds a different dynamic to the event. So I expect it's going to play tough this week. It's a tough course. And generally, the winning scores, minus 12, up to about minus 17 when it plays a little bit softer and a little bit easier. But I'd be surprised to see somewhere around about double figures, maybe 11, 12 under being the winning score this week. So we'll see how that pans out. Winners here since it's been played at Diamond Country Club then. 2010 was Jose Manuel Lara. He won at 66-1. Kenneth Ferry in 2011 at 55s. Bernd Wiesberger at 25-1 in 2012. Joost Louten 25-1 again in 2013. Michael Lundberg 250-1 in 2014. Chris Wood at 12-1 in 2015. Ashen Wu 160-1 in 2016. Then Dylan Fratelli at 40-1. Mikko Korhonen won the shot clock. He won the shot clock Masters in 2018. I was on him at 28-1 that particular week. And then Mark Warren won the first event back last year, pushing his own clubs around on his trolley. 150-1 he was last July to win.
That was a very atypical victory here, though, wasn't it? Because Mark Warren is in no way, shape, or form a greens and regulation monster, is he?
Well, do you know, you look back through Mark Warren, and I go back to his performances at Wentworth back in the day, and when he plays well, it is, you know, he's that kind of 80, 85% greens and regulation player, right. But it just doesn't happen that often. And if you go back through his form coming into this event last July, it was terrible. He played once in a year, he'd finished 45th, I think it was, in South Africa. And the previous year in 2019, he hadn't had a top 50 finish on the European Tour.
Yeah.
Then arrives in Austria and wins 150-1. Now, good luck with that. And I know, you know, I know Ben Coley put him up at 150s, and you know, to pluck that out of the air and to get him over the line was incredible. So hats off to Ben. But yeah, if you're trying to work through a play and pick a player like that, good luck. But yeah, I guess when you boil it all down, approach plays key for me, greens and regulation key. There's no stats from the event in July. It was, as I said, the first event back from the COVID break, so it was all very, very limited. And I think there's going to be limited shots tracking this week again, by the sounds of it. But we should see some pictures on the TV screens at least. But yeah, approach plays key, greens and regulation key. Scrambling is tough, so you're much better being able to find the greens and putting rather than trying to scramble and save par is particularly difficult. Incoming form isn't critical, as we said. Mark Warren, you know, showed virtually nothing coming into it. Some of the players who won here, you know, did have some form coming in, but a lot of them are quite patchy at best. Course form seems to be more positive in my view, and I think you need to kind of understand the intricacies of this track, because you can look at the track and think, actually, you know, it's quite straightforward, and then it really is quite a challenge, particularly on and around the greens. So, and of course, we're going to have to find someone who can handle the conditions. You know, it's not going to be for everyone. Some of the southern European players turning up this week and playing in, you know, virtually sub-zero temperatures, with their gloves on, with their snoods on, with their, you know, a couple of coats and jackets and hats and all sorts going on. You're going to need to be able to find a way to play in those kind of conditions. So, you know, potentially it's one for the northern Europeans and those kind of more hardy types who've proven in the past that they can handle the conditions. And that's kind of where I've gone down. The route that I've taken is a bit of course form's good, and those players that I've shown an aptitude for playing, or, you know, or should theoretically have an ability to play in tougher, colder conditions as well. So yeah, that's where I've got to. I've backed four this week. I've headlined with Joost Luiten. And go back to July. Joost Luiten was 13-2 to win this tournament in July. He finished 18th. He hadn't played for months coming into that event, as no one had. 22-1 he is this week. And that's coming off the back of a seventh place finish on his last outing. The price kind of flummoxed me a bit, because I'd had Joost in mind for this. You guys know that I follow Joost quite closely anyway. I was expecting maybe 16-1 at best. So 20 was the first price that came up. And then 22s is widely available with some extended places as well. So I think that's a cracking price. And as I say, seventh last time out in Kenya. He was 10th for driving accuracy that week, 16th for greens and regulation, 9th for strokes gained approach. That's Joost. That's what we expect to see from Joost Luiten. What we don't expect to see is 2nd for strokes gained putting. And I say I watch Joost's stats quite closely. That's because he's one of these that I think you can really see telegraph an impending victory. And we expect him to be good from tee to green. We expect his approach play to be good. We expect his putting to be fairly middling. So when I'm seeing 2nd for strokes gained putting, that is an absolute green light for me to jump on. So you couple that with the fact that his course form here, 3rd, 1st, 3rd, 6th, 7th, 18th over 6 attempts. So he won back here in 2013. That was with his old caddy, Martin Gray, back in the day. He's recently switched back to Martin Gray. He's got him back on the bag. Good personal relationship he's got with Martin. Seems really quite buoyed with the fact that he's got his old caddy back on. Clearly some positive vibes from back in the day when they won here together. I think it's all lines up nicely. He'll be fine with the conditions. You know, again, another Northern European. He'll understand how to play. And the tougher it gets, the better for Joost, in my view. So 22-1. Couldn't go any other way towards the top of the market, I must say. Another player I've backed, David Horsey. He had his breakthrough, what he was described as his breakthrough in lockdown with his swing. And it's interesting the words that he used. He described his approach play now as being leagues better than it ever has been. And that's interesting for Horsey, because, again, he's a neat and tidy player. I'd have always put him down as having a decent approach play or approach game anyway. So to see him now purring about the fact that his approach game is better than it ever has been is pretty telling, I think. And we saw that in Saudi on his last outing. Top quality field it was in Saudi as well, wasn't it? And he finished 2nd for strokes gained approach that week and hit over 80% in greens and regulation. And that was his best relative to the field performance in that stat for over 18 months. So seems like we're getting a fruition of the work that he's been doing, and these, you know, kind of swing tweaks. I don't think the wholesale swing changes that he's made, but swing tweaks that he's made, particularly with his irons, that has got him really excited about the shape of his game going forward. He welcomed a baby son into the world at the start of April a couple of weeks ago, so we'll clearly be buoyed by that. The nappy factor is as is often stated. Course form, 9th, 38th, 31st, 2nd, and then 7th, the last time that he played here as well. Some good positive vibes on this particular track as well. And again, being an Englishman, he'll have played in all sorts of weathers over the years, so you'd expect him to be able to handle the conditions, I'd have said. So yeah, so Horsey's in as well. 55-1 Horsey. John Catlin are backed at 70-1. He's been nibbled in a little bit, but there's still some 60s out there. And I think anything 50 and above is a good price for Catlin. I backed him in Kenya the last time out, and he missed the cut, which is a common theme. I'll forgive him that for this time, because I think tougher tests are absolutely what we should be looking at for John Catlin. 9 wins in 4 years, and the boy's clearly a winner. And clearly they're one that can take his opportunities when they're presented to him. We talk about tough tests. +2 he won at Valderrama. 10 under in Ireland. And that Irish Open victory that we saw at the back end or last autumn was again another one in cold conditions. It was generally sub 50 Fahrenheit for the 4 days. So he got the job done there. Clearly showed an aptitude and ability to play in these kind of cooler, colder conditions as well. And the ball striking is absolutely his strongest suit. It suits this particular track like a glove, I think. Finished 8th here on debut in July, so got on with it well. And that was off the back of 3 straight missed cuts. So he's coming in with some stronger form this year. And he looked good in Kenya. The week before I backed him, the first Kenyan event, he was 4th for driving accuracy, 2nd for greens in regulation, 2nd for strokes gained approach. It was clearly the weight of my money the following week, which dragged him down. But let's hope that has a negative, the opposite effect this particular week. And he puts in a decent performance this week. We live in hope. So John Catlin, the 70s, is in. And the final player I've backed is Craig Howie at 150-1. I backed him, remember, back at the Belfry in the autumn last year, backed him at 250s, and he finished 5th there, so that was a lovely each way return. It's not quite the same price here this week, but that's because he finished 4th here back in July, so clearly got some course form. I think the logic for both of those events is similar here. He's got a cracking long game, and that's perfectly what's going to suit this particular week, I think. It's a hardy Scott, the conditions aren't going to impact him or affect him as much as some of the other players this week, I think.
He'll be playing in shorts if he could.
Yeah, maybe a little extreme, but yeah, he's clearly going to be one that's more comfortable in the conditions out there, I've thought. And he's got to take his opportunities. They've rejigged the card categories for the European Tour, and Craig's getting very, very few starts. And he's kind of conceded that he might get maybe a half a dozen starts this season. The rest of the time he's going to be playing either the Sunshine Tour or the Challenge Tour. So when he does get a start, as he gets this particular week, he's got to take his opportunities. And the course suits, the conditions suit. He finished 4th here last year. I think he's got a good chance of making the frame at 150-1. It's a great price in my view. So yeah, they're the four I've gone for. Craig Howie, John Catlin, David Horsey, and at the top of the shop is Joost Luiten, who I think has got a great chance.
I'm going to interject, being the host of the podcast. Paul, I want you to sit there and think, because we've been asked about this quite a lot now, haven't we? So, Transatlantic Double.
Yep.
Who's your nomination for that? And also, who will be your, what's the best way of putting this? Your fade of the week.
Well, I have. I've
have you got a fade of the week? Have you already thought about this?
Detri, whatever. Well, the pronunciation is.
Yeah, in terms of we've
done quite well with our fades recently. We're good at picking the ones that don't win.
If anybody just follows our tips from last week, you could have to get all the fades.
They're dangerous, aren't they? It's dangerous to state the fade because they invariably can go well in it unless you pick someone further down.
Get on with it, man.
My each way transatlantic double I have placed is Joost Luiten into Kevin Na.
Okay, so you're going for Luiten as your part of the transatlantic
double, absolutely, right? Yeah.
And what about your fade of the week?
There's a logic. There's a logic to this, though, being a dangerous thing to call, because you need to call somebody who theoretically should or has a great chance of winning. So that's why it's so risky, which is great. So I'll call mine as Detri or Dietri. I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. Sorry, Thomas.
Fading, you know, I'm just picking, you know, fading David Howell isn't much of a fade this week.
Well, no, of course it's not. And you could make a negative case for Detri on the basis of him not getting over the line. You could say the same with Martin Keimer as well. You know, again, I could look at Keimer and say, well, you know, I don't think he's going to win. And invariably, he probably won't win. But tougher conditions, you know, perhaps he uses his guile and his, you know, experience to get himself into a position where he could potentially
get off the fence, Paul.
I think we've got there eventually, Barry. You're on Thomas Dietri and Paul's on Martin Keimer, right? Okay, brilliant.
For not winning, just to clarify, winning. Yes. So these guys are possibly the ones you should back now.
Yeah, fade of the week and lay of the week.
There'll be a playoff now between Thomas Dietri and Martin Keimer.
I'm nowhere near this tournament. So, Barry, over to you. Who have you got an interest in this week over in Austria? And then we'll move on to the RBC Heritage.
I do like that Craig Howie shout a lot. It's a shame I did not get to do some research yesterday and catch the early prices. But I think I might go with the Boyle Sports 8 places on him this week and sacrifice a bit of that overall price. So there's that, and the other one who kind of shot off the page a little bit for me was Nino Bertasio. So I don't know how he handles cold conditions, but, you know, good last three events. He went 19th, 12th, 10th, a couple of weeks off to rest up. He's as a 19th and a 10th at this event, and we'll go from there. Just give it a whirl. He's
current form and course form.
I mean, just something simple. I don't want to put too much effort into it, because then I'll just lose my mind. And he's generally available right at 50 to 60 to 1. So it's enough of a price there that I'm not going to like feel like it's a missed opportunity if he doesn't land. You know, but
no. There's a good combination there, and it's, you know, there's a few that catch your eye in that kind of position where they've got that course form and current form as well. He was one that was shortlisted for me as well. But it plumped for the other four in the end.
That's allowed.
Should we talk about the RBC Heritage?
Go for it.
I wouldn't say I was surprised, but it's a decent field this week. Very decent field for the week after the Masters. You know, we've had renewals of this that have been quite weak, but not this year. I think the bookmakers kind of knew, didn't they, that Bryson was going to WD on this because they were very reluctant to offer any odds.
Yeah,
I think we were waiting until, was it almost 5 o'clock?
It was far later than normal. Often you're getting, you know, 10, 11 o'clock UK time, you're starting to see a couple trickle through, but well past 3 o'clock, there was absolutely nothing.
It was getting on for 4 o'clock, I think, you know, UK time, before we got Bet365 with some prices. Simpson, Unibet have done exactly the same. You pointed this out off air. Clearly, Dustin Johnson is pretty much every bookmaker's favourite, apart from Unibet, who have gone 8-1 Webb Simpson and 12-1 Dustin Johnson. Now, Dustin Johnson, with every other book, is either a 9 or 10-1 shot. So if you're adamant that Dustin Johnson wins this week, get yourself a Unibet account and back him at 12-1. They've reversed the odds out completely. Simpson is a 12-1 shot everywhere else, but with Unibet, he's 8-1. DJ is 12-1 with Unibet. Then we've got Cantlay, Morikawa, who, you know, tempting at 20-1. I did have a very good close look on Colin Morikawa. Daniel Berger at 22s. Cam Smith, I'm sure to be popular. And Tyrrell Hatton at 25s. Paul Casey at 28s. What did you think to him last week, Barry? Paul Casey. He was the darling of the markets, wasn't he, Paul Casey?
I'm going to say it was one of the few things I said on the podcast last week that was correct. He did, like, I don't know. This kind of ties into our little pre-ramble before we hit the record button about the older guys. didn't really pop. Like we both thought Sergio was going to go well. Yeah. We shouted him. Yeah, he absolutely tanked.
Bogeyed the first two holes. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, look, Rose had a good week out of nowhere. So there's those older guys can pop into contention, but it's about picking the right one on the right week, and maybe that's a little bit harder. So yeah, I mean, look, you guys know my stance on Casey. The guy's not getting any of my money, so. Or the bookies aren't getting any of my money to to go on Casey.
We've got two non-PGA Tour winners at 30-1. In fact, we've got three. We've got Matthew Fitzpatrick, who says that this is his favourite course in America. I also, you know, I read out the ball striking numbers from the Masters. Matthew Fitzpatrick's numbers, again, were very, very strong. He was fourth for total driving. Total driving, Matthew Fitzpatrick, yeah? He hit the most amount of fairways and he was 26th for driving distance at 298. Fourth for total driving and he was fifth for ball striking last week at the Masters, Matthew Fitzpatrick. Again, a lot to like about him this week. You've got Abraham Anser at 30-1. We have Will Zalatoris, the hero of last week, at 30-1. And then 33s, Corey Connors, Brian Harman, 35s with Sungjae Im, who seems to have fallen off a cliff recently. But Bermuda grass greens, we know how Sungjae comes to the party on Bermuda grass. Then we're out to Sergio Garcia, my nemesis from last week. Thank you, Sergio. And Kevin Na at 40-1. There's still a lot of quality beyond those. English, Siwoo Kim, Shane Lowry, Fleetwood, 50-1 with Unibet. Tommy Fleetwood. That's an outlandish price. He's 33-1 with other firms. Billy Horschel at 55s. I said to you, Paul, yesterday, Billy Horschel at 55s. He just won a World Golf Championship.
Yeah. That shows you the depth of the field, doesn't it?
Yes. Great field. Hoffman, Henley, Kirk, and Kuchar at 66s. Kisner at 66s. Lee Westwood at 66s with Unibet. So deep, deep field. So that's good. The golf course. Now, it doesn't really need a lot of introduction. It's Harbour Town Golf Course. It's on Hilton Head in South Carolina. I think they say it's about a 2-hour drive away from Augusta National. It's a peat dye design. I categorise it as a Carolina golf course. It's coastal, clearly, although you actually look at it, I think it's 15 or 16 of the holes are not on the water. They're inland, tree-lined fairways. Very, very thin fairways and tiny greens. The second smallest greens on the PGA Tour at 3,700 square feet on average. I think it's Harbour Town and Pebble Beach have the smallest greens on the PGA Tour each and every year. They've slightly extended the course this year. It's 7,121 yards. I think the length has been added completely to the par 3. I think it's the 16th. They've added 30, or they must have put a new tee box on it. Let me just clarify now. I'm just going through my paperwork as ever. Yeah, it's the... we'll get there. It's good podcasting. It's the 17th. The par 3 that they shoot towards the sea. The second last hole is one of the signature holes. 174 last year. They've added... it's out to 196 this year. So an extra 22 yards. What else? In terms of this, we have water hazards on each hole. Well, it doesn't grab me as a, it's no Florida golf course. There isn't acres and acres and acres of water either side of the fairways, but clearly streams and tributaries running down the length of holes. Some of the holes are fronted as well with ponds and with tributaries as well. So 18 of the holes have water hazards. But it's just, I always think it's very claustrophobic. It reminds me, but not as an extreme, as a little bit like Valderrama.
A little bit, yeah. And those trees holding you in, right?
Yeah, and Graham McDowell has won on both. Would I be right in that, Paul? Graham McDowell won at Valderrama?
Yeah.
For a PGA Tour event, we know how American golf courses play in general. Long, wide, power. I mean, we'll see in Kia Island soon. Yeah. This is the complete reversal of that. It's very short. It's very claustrophobic. And it negates power. It's actually the complete 180 of what we saw last week at Augusta. The only thing I will say that there are similarities. For me, again, this is a shot shaper's golf course. And you read that, I've got masses and masses of player quotes in the preview available at Golf Betting System. Webb Simpson again said it last year on his way to a victory here. It's about being able to shape the ball both ways if you can. He won a 22 under last year. CT Pan 12 under in 2019. CT Pan, that was his first ever win on the tour. Satoshi Kodaira, I'm sorry, Barry, I have to mention it. 12 under, he won in 2018. I won't mention who he beat.
He didn't win it, Siwoo lost it.
Wesley Bryan at 13 under. Brendan Grace at 9 under. So you could say four of the past five renewals have been won by first-time PGA Tour winners, although Brandon Grace was hardly a non-entity. I think he was in the top 12 or 15 in the world. And he'd won in Dubai, I think, on the European Tour before winning this. So I did see a tweet out there saying, Tour maidens are a must for the RBC heritage. And then it's like, well, Webb Simpson won last year. So I'm not taking anything into that. But yeah, it's the greens themselves are Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass. They were freshly laid in 2016. But because it's April, because it's still frosty in the mornings, dew and whatever, they're still over-seeded with Poa trivialis. And if you're looking at good comps for Poa trivialis and Tiff Eagle over-seeded Bermuda grass greens, I always point people to PGA West where they play the Amex. And also here, you could do a lot worse than looking at Copperhead, where they'll be playing the Valspar Championship in a couple of weeks. Now that, of course, is Paul Casey territory. He's won the last two renewals, I believe, of the Valspar Championship. So yeah, I could see Casey popping up this week. Just some kind of numbers for you. I always find these events a bit weird in the way that they're a week after the Masters. It won't surprise you that the majority of recent champions did play down the road in Georgia the week before. Satoshi Kodaira, Brandon Grace, Jim Furyk twice, Matt Kuchar, Graham McDowell and Brant Snedeker. You can add Boo Wheatley to that list the second time he won this. He went back to back. Boo Wheatley. Wow. And then you've also got the mix where who didn't play at Augusta, Brian Gay in 2009, Carl Pettersson in 2012, Wesley Bryan in 2016, who won this as a maiden, although it then came out that he'd clearly played about 4,500 rounds around here from about the age of three. And CT Pan in 2019 also didn't play the Masters. So there's, you can look at it.
Yeah, a mix, it's
a non-entity, really. You can have players that didn't play the Masters or players that did play the Masters. And clearly the better players did play last week. One thing I did note, though, and I'm also including in this last year's RSM Classic, which was played the week after the November Masters. Robert Streb won that. He was 55th in Bermuda the outing before he won the RSM Classic. You were on Kevin Kisner at 40-1 that week, Barry. He'd missed the cut at the Masters the week before. And, Tringali was in the top five that week, 29th at Houston. Wiesberger, 58 at the Masters. Andrew Landry missed the cut at the Masters. Those were the top guys that particular week. Then we go to 2019, back to the RBC Heritage, back to April. CT Pan had missed the cut in San Antonio. Matt Kuchar finished runner-up. He was 12th at Augusta. He'd been 7th after 54 holes at Augusta. Patrick Cantlay finished 9th at Augusta. I'd been on Patrick Cantlay, I think you were as well, Barry, the week before at Augusta. He was 14th after 54 holes and clearly finished quite strongly until the last two or three when he bogeyed them all. But Cantlie had been in the mix at Augusta. Shane Lowry had missed the cut at Augusta. Satoshi Gadaira the year before, he'd finished 28th at Augusta. He'd been 21st after 54 holes and he was priced up at 250 to 1. I couldn't find anyone in the Gadaira mould this week, someone that was clearly a lot better than the price suggested.
Yeah, from a world ranking perspective.
Yes, from a world ranking perspective. Siwoo Kim, that particular year, had finished 24th at Augusta, and he'd been 21st after 54 holes. He'd also made the last 16. He'd qualified out of the group at the World Match Play. Anyway, we just keep going. Wesley Bryan, 62nd in Puerto Rico, didn't play the Augusta. Brandon Grace had missed the cut in Augusta. Jim Furyk had missed the cut at Augusta. So players that missed the cut at Augusta isn't a bad route. The only one I found that was a real, absolute, stone-cold feature of the Masters the week before that then went on to win this, who else would it be? Matt Kuchar. He'd finished fourth in San Antonio, runner-up in Houston. That was the famous Matt Jones, oh golly, gosh, when he hit in the water on 18 when he should have won. He then went to Augusta, was third after 54 holes and finished fifth the week before this. He won this at 18 to 1. So I don't, you know, you can look at it all different ways. My instant reaction sometimes to this is don't pick people that were in the picture last week because it's a big come down. And
counterpoint to that, though, was anybody else really in the picture other than Hideki? I mean, yeah, the guys are kind of trying, but like how much, other than like the four or five guys, the four, let's say, that were in within four shots of him or five shots going into Sunday, the rest are really sitting there going, yeah, look, come on, I'm not going to win the Masters. I need to shoot a ridiculous round. So you're not like, you're not burning all the emotional energy reserves.
No, I agree. I've actually gone for one that was really in the mix last week. He's my headline tip, as it goes.
Don't say Casey.
I'm not saying Paul Casey. Is there anything there I've missed? Anything you want to add about the course, the tournament in general, or whatever, before we move on?
They need more
lighthouses. They need more lighthouses.
Yeah, it's a cracking looking track, isn't it? No, I think you're right. You know, there's clearly some comparable courses that you've included in the preview this week, and you mentioned some of them. This, you know, Copperhead's a good one, isn't it? Sedgefield's another one where there's a lot of crossover as well.
Sedgefield so. Country Club's all over it like a rash, isn't it?
Yeah.
Branch Snedeker, JT Poston, CT Pan, of course. Would he finish second there? And I think he'd finished second at the Wyndham Championship the year before, went into a complete abyss, and then popped up at this and won 160 to 1.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good one just to take a kind of an alternative view of, you know, kind of pseudo course form and see if it throws up any names as well.
That throws out a lot of names this week that you could back at a price. I mean, Luke Donald, if you really want to go out there, 600 to 1. A Wesley Bryan, 500 to 1 with the local knowledge. You've also got some guys with some reasonable form recently. You know, I was surprised to see someone like Camilo Villegas at a very, very big price. Now, I was tempted on Villegas. He's 300 to 1 with BetVictor, 250 to 1 with 8 places across a number of firms. And if you... Camillo, Spider-Man, starting to find his game. Top 10 at the Honda Classic. That gave him, or that helped him to get a mid... I think he's not got full status, but he's got kind of mid-level status now on the tour after a medical. He was also right in the mix at Valero. Finished 18th in the end. He just seems to be getting a bit of that, you know, that strut, that you just watch him play now. He seems to be enjoying his golf, a lot more confident. Camillo, if you look at where he's won... he's a Wyndham Championship winner for a start. So yes, things I noted as well in the preview. If you're looking at high quality elite players, you've got this 2010 through 2015, and also with Webb Simpson last year, You've got a whole list of players there that all had finished in the top five at Kapalua. So the first event that they play on the PGA Tour every year, Tiff Eagle Bermuda Grass Greens out on Maui. There's something there. So Furyk's in there, Simpson's in there. Matt Kuchar, players that have gone very, very close to winning that event over in Maui. There's also something here, and it's not, you know, not every year, but 8 of the 12 winners here from 2009 onwards had all finished in the top 10 at the Valspar Championship at Copperhead. That's the one they play up at Tampa. It's in Florida, but by that is no Florida golf course. That effectively is a Carolina golf course. It's exactly the same as this. Pretty, a little bit longer, but tight, tree-lined, same kind of green structure. Bermuda grass with the Pura trivialis overseed. So there's something in that. Again, that's shouting Paul Casey. Clearly, I haven't. Brandon Grace doesn't fall in that 8 of 12, but he does fall into it because after he won this, he then went to get a top 10 at the Valspar. So there's definitely something between Copperhead and here as well. And as we said, Wyndham Championship. The first one on my list was 33-1. I got him at 8 places each way. He is a fantastic... I always just think he's understated. And a lot of people will look at his price this week and go, oh, I'm not backing him. You know, I can get Sungjae Im at the price. I can get Billy Horschel at a bigger price. And that's very true. But the one thing you say about this guy and the one thing I like about him is he's the kind of right player. He's nuggety. He's got a great short game. He's got an all-round game. He's a two-time winner on the PGA Tour. He's got a brilliant Pete Dye record, and that's Brian Harman. Just Harman is playing great golf at the moment. I remember when he won down up the coast at Wilmington when they played the Wells Fargo Championship just the one time at Eagle Point Golf Club. And he won that in 2017. He won that off a top 10 here at the RBC Heritage. And he beat John Rahm pretty much in a head-to-head. And there was a hard, fast charge in Dustin Johnson that came into it as well. And he held both of them off. And that just shows that Harman has got the fortitude to actually win on the tour. And I just thought 33-1, 8 places with Ball Sports, I would cover off Brian Harman. He was far too obvious not to cover off, playing some fantastic golf right now. Quarter finalist at the World Match Play. And also you just go through the whole list of Pete Dye track. I mean, he was third at the Players' Championship a few weeks ago. I won't go through the others, but there's just a whole list of top tens at Pete Dye Design. So I just thought Harman, 33-1, not the worst price in the world. He's the sort that wins this. And clearly, I think he went out in the second last group on the Saturday at Augusta. So he was right in the mix after 36 holes, eventually finished in that top 12 to get an invite back for next season.
Yeah, he's been playing some lovely stuff, hasn't he? You go back to the World Match Play, again, another Pete Dye track, and he was racking up birdies for fun, wasn't he? He went on an incredible stretch.
Seven straight against Bubba when he was four down.
Absolutely, yeah, he was way down and then just reeled off birdie after birdie after birdie. And he's a cracking putter. That Wells Fargo Championship you talk about, I backed him that week at 80-1 and kind of more in hope than expectation. But as you said, he was really strong. His putting was outstanding to hold off Rahm and DJ that week. And yeah, while he's playing hot, I can see exactly why you've gone down that route.
We always say players of the bat, Brian Harman, and we're seeing this more and more, players that are short and just haven't got the physical attributes. They see this week, they see a tournament like a Sony Open, like an RBC Heritage, like an RSM Classic later in the year. This is a huge opportunity to get a PGA Tour victory. I don't think Harman will be taking this lightly. I really don't. I don't think he's going to be the sort that's turning up here just because he has to, because he's an RBC-sponsored player, for example. Next up, I've gone... He was chalked up originally with a couple of firms at 66-1, and I just could not believe the price. I was you and I were typing furiously, you know, keyboards exploding with the heat, the kinetic energy of getting this out as quickly as we could. By the time you'd published and I'd published, that price had come down from that 66 to 1 that they either got backed or they realised that they'd made a bit of an error. But Harris English, a point each way, I got 50 to 1 with Ball Sports, the eight places on Harris English. And if we're talking Kapalua and we're talking that top four finish kind of angle, Brian Harman has finished third at Kapalua. And Harris English, of course, won there this year. And that isn't the only reason I've picked him. I just think English is starting to start. You know, he won that huge tournament down over in Maui. He hadn't won for a period of time. That clearly was a huge relief to him. He then took, that can either work one of two ways. With English, he kind of disappeared. But you just start to see now he's starting to play some really nice golf again. 19th, 4th and 21st at the last three majors. He was 21st last week at Augusta. Finished, I think, with 70 on Sunday, which was one of the best top 10 rounds of the day. And you just look at English's record. Sea Island, Waialae, the Sony Open, Torrey Pines, Sea Island, El Chameleon. He lives on Sea Island. He's performed well at Sea Island, his home golf track. He's also a winner at the Mayakoba Golf Classic by the coast down there in Mexico. He's won at TPC Southwind, a tough, claustrophobic par 70. Just a lot to like about English this week, I think. The sort that could go very well. Again, I think he'll be motivated to do well. It's one of the events that's close to his heart. I just thought 66s with the wrong price, 50 to 1 again, that I'm more than happy to be on at 50 to 1. Target price, by the way, you know, I'll say target price, but the historical winning price around here is, since 2010, 68 to 1.
Yeah, juicy mid-price range.
Simpson was 30s last year, and I know that was a completely different tournament. It literally had everyone in it. But 30 to 1, even so, he wouldn't have been in the top, 7, 8 in the betting at 30 to 1? Pan, Kadira, 160s and 250s. Brian was an 80 to 1 chance. Grace, 40 to 1. Then we got Furyk, 25s, Kuchar, 18s. McDowell, 40 to 1. Pettersson, 55s. And even Branch Snedeker was 35 to 1. So that's kind of where I'm fishing. I'm fishing a bit deeper this week. Harris English at 50s. I've also got Kevin Na at 50 to 1. Again, he was priced up at 66s with William Hill at first. Yeah, I think he was 66s with Bet365 as well, wasn't he?
Yeah. While they were still trying to get their heads around the Bryson withdrawal, it was there was some juicy early prices out there. But that's too long. For a guy that's playing so well.
I'll let you talk about Kevin Na because I know he's one of yours. It's the wrong price, isn't it?
It is the wrong price. Yeah, if he wins this week, it's a typical Kevin Na winning price, isn't it? You've listed a few of his prices in your preview, he has a far better chance of winning. What's he got? 5 PGA Tour wins now.
Five PGA Tour wins, and 4 of those wins have come in 56 worldwide outings, which for a win rate for a professional golfer is outstanding.
Yeah.
Winning prices, 45 to 1 at the Greenbrier, 70 to 1 at Colonial, 70 to 1 at Summerlin, Las Vegas, 80 to 1 this year at the Sony Open.
No, it's, again, this price point, the kind of the 50 to 1, give or take, thereabout price is absolutely where you'd expect to see Kevin Na popping up. And it's not as if he's out of form, is it? You know, he won the Sony Open, as you said, another short, fiddly track, 11th at the concession, 12th last week at Augusta. And you talk about short game, you know, these are tiny greens, aren't they? You talk about short game again.
You've got to have a scrambling game here, mate.
Absolutely. And who led scrambling last week at Augusta National? Kevin Na, first for scrambling. 5 top 10 finishes here over the years. Sedgefield we talked about as well. 18th, 10th, 4th, his last three attempts at Century.
He's also finished second at Copperhead behind John Sendon, of all people.
Yes, yeah, right. He got two or three. I think he's got three top tens at Copperhead altogether. And as you say, that's second place finish there as well. And yeah, I think he's the win equity with Kevin Na is far outstrips his price.
It's that ceiling, isn't it? You know, he can win.
Yeah, absolutely.
He could miss the cut. He could WD after one round. That's Kevin Na, but he could contend and he can win at a good price. One thing I did note with this one, Paul, 12th last week at the Masters equaled Na's best ever finish there.
Yeah.
A feat he's already managed twice, both in 2012 and 2015. Looking back, when he finished 12th there, 2012, he came here and finished 8th the week after. And in 2015, 12th at the Masters, the next stroke play event he played, he was 6th at the Players' Championship, another Pete Dye design.
There you go.
So he keeps that. He keeps that mo going, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, and since those two events you talked about there, he's been far more likely to convert. He's been turning those contending or top ten finishes into wins. So yeah, really quite happy to be on top on Kevin Na this week personally.
Right. So Harman, English and Na for me. I've got two more. Barry, over to you, because I know for a fact that you're definitely on my fourth pick.
That's it. Like we've reactivated the Kisner plan.
Yeah.
We've actually reactivated the Woodlands plan, which Kisner is currently on, or will be back on this week. So it makes Kisner and Pete Dye and Bermuda courses ones that aren't too long in particular, like this one. Just make all the sense in the world. I'm going to rob a little bit of your preview, Steve, because you did some great work. Of all the guys that missed the cut, led the greens in regulation. So for Kisner at Augusta that plays, you know, so long, that's pretty tasty. I think he hit 26 out of 36 greens. So you have to kind of read a bit into that. And he's always expressed a love for this tournament and this course. So with that, I jumped out into the... we talked about Kisner for this week anyway on last week's pod and said, you know, I actually had a bit of fear when he started so well on Thursday. And
What price did you envisage when the market started popping up for Kevin Kisner? What did you envisage?
I said I would have been, on our little chat, I said I would have been happy enough with 50s.
Yeah, I was surprised to see 66. It's a pleasant surprise, I've got to say.
And then, Paddy Power decided to be really awesome. Maybe just felt a little guilty about taking my money last week. And
popped
him up. I don't know. Maybe it was just a glitch in the system. But they popped him up at 66s and I had a Power up available. So I got him at 75s and put a multi-point each way bet on him. So... let's go, Kiz. I don't know what else to say. Big fan of his game.
You and I, and we were all watching the World Match Play. I go back to the Wednesday and I go back to all three. I just thought he was playing some really nice stuff again at the Pete Dye Design Austin Country Club, which those greens are exactly the same as well. Tiff Eagle, Bermuda Grass, Poa, Trivialist, Overseed. He was, you know, when he beat Justin Thomas, he was playing some outstanding golf, hitting fairways as he does, great approach playing, putting, just, you know, he's an outstanding putter, isn't he?
I'd absolutely hate to play him in match play. He's so gritty and dogged and will just never, ever let you get, I'd say you just don't get an easy win against him on holes, you know? So, he's my big one this week. Nothing else to add on Kisner,
yeah. I suppose, I haven't backed anyone else that's less than triple digits. Have you guys?
What odds did I get the other one? Actually, I did. So the other one I backed without too much thought, but I'm now going and doing a bit of digging to back it up.
Yep.
Was Rob McIntyre, or Robert McIntyre. Mm-hmm. As he insists, which is fine. Look, he's absolutely buzzing. Got his top 12 there last week in his first Masters, so he knows he's got the invitation back there next week. He's just going to be on cloud 9 and swinging so freely this week. there's not much other, there wasn't much other logic to it than that. And the fact that he's Scottish and there's a tartan jacket for the win here. So that was my next bit of
the tartan factor.
The tartan factor could be the hidden, you know, the missing ingredient. But doing a little bit of digging back in, he led the field in birdies last week.
Yeah, he did. They mentioned that on the broadcast, yeah.
21 birdies, two better than the next best group of guys. Interesting that Hideki only had 13 birdies, but you know he did make those big birds. The eagles really helped juice your score a bit. So
yeah, he was the best for bogeys all week. Matsuyama,
bogey avoidance. Yeah. And that's the thing. If you don't make bogeys, then you don't have to make as many birdies. It's a pretty clean equation.
Yeah. European Ryder Cup team right now: Tommy Fleetwood, Rahm, Hatton, McIlroy from the European points, world points. Westwood, Victor Perez, Paul Casey, Victor Hovland, Matthew Fitzpatrick. Robert McIntyre is now the next in that ranking above Sergio Garcia. That's the kind of golf McIntyre's been playing.
Super soft. The only flaw.
It's going to be interesting. I could see McIntyre making the Ryder Cup team.
He could.
It starts to become a bit inexperienced at that point, though, because you've got Perez in there, you've got Victor Hovland in there. But he, you know, if he keeps playing, if he can win another event on the European Tour, mate, I don't know, maybe he pops up at the Belfry next month and wins the Betfred British Masters. He's the kind of player you want on board, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. He seems like a battler, so he kind of, you know, negates the rookiness a little bit.
He got out of the group in the World Match Play as well.
He's been impressive. He's really impressive lately. That's what the picks are there for as well. If the team is, you know, imbalanced in terms of rookies versus experience, then there's the option there to balance it up a little bit.
The only thing he did last week was palled up with Patrick Reed, saying that the two of them are mates and he's hanging around. I was like, what are you doing? It seems so crazy because, like, was it 2 years ago or last year? He was given a yards about Kyle Stan. Was it Kyle Stanley not shouting four? And he was like, Robert McIntyre was saying he was a big stickler for the rules. And now you see he's hanging around with Patrick Reed. You're like, well, you know, there's a little bit of a disconnect there, mate, because, you know, not throwing any accusations out there, but, you know, Reed is Reed, and, you know, we all know. We all know the situation there. It's a little bit of a murky record he has when it comes to the rules. So I didn't get it, but it seemed to work, whatever tips he got from him, because he had a great week.
Yeah. No, really impressive debut. Very impressive.
There hasn't been a winner of this particular tournament outside of the top 115 in the world golf rankings since Aaron Baddeley in 2006, and that kind of led me to my last pick at a triple digit price, because I think he's been playing some outstanding golf recently, completely and utterly under the radar. Now, that could throw you towards a JT Poston, who I know is going to be popular this week, but it threw me to the grinder Michael Thompson, Alabama, one of the Sea Island Mafia. But you just look at where Thompson has done well. I landed him 125-1 full each way payout at the American Express back in January. I think he finished fourth. And my whole reasoning for that was because he just plays Pete Dye courses in an understatedly good way. And he's finished ninth and fifth there at PJ West when they played a stadium course. He's had a fourth place finish at TPC River Highlands, the Travellers. And you just look at him here, 10th in 2019 and 8th last year in 2020. He sits currently at 98th, I think it is, in the world rankings, up from 272nd 10 months ago when they we came back after COVID, the resumption. So he's clearly upwardly mobile. Just the kind of player who's kind of hits plenty of greens, a bit of a grinder, and we just hits loads of fairways as well, can shape the ball, and just the kind of sort that putts very, very positively on Bermuda grass. And I just thought, you know, he was 34th at the Masters last week. I mean, Michael Thompson, 48th of the players and 19th of the Honda Classic. He's playing some really consistent golf right now. Won't be sexy. I doubt if many will get on him. But I just took 125-1 with William Hill. As I was writing the tip, he was 150-1. That got cut to 125s. But anyway, I think that's a more than backable price on Michael Thompson this week, 125-1. So I've got Thompson, Kisner, Kevin Na, Harris English, and Brian Harman. Who have you guys got at triple digits this week?
Well, you mentioned him a second ago, JT Poston I've backed. He was 22nd at Sawgrass, and that was after starting really poorly, open with a 76 that week. For the remaining 3 days, there were only five players in the field that beat his three-day score. You know, all finished in a much loftier position at 22nd. So I think he's playing a little bit better than his underlying results would suggest. Sixth and eighth here from his two attempts and one at Sedgefield back in 2019. So, yeah, quite happy to take on Poston. The other one I backed is a guy that you had at Valero Texas Open, Charlie Hoffman, 60-1.
Now,
Hoffmeister. Yeah, I backed him first round leader that week. And of course, he was five over through 15 and did absolutely nothing. He had the best second round of the entire field. He had the best third round of the entire field. So clearly my timing was just out by a day or two. Finished with 66, 65, 66 that week. His three-round score was six shots better than anyone else in the field.
How often do you see that on the PGA Tour? He didn't win.
You know, after you take those first 15 holes out of the equation, he was incredible. He was outstanding. So yeah, and there's just been that one destructive round in his games recently. Obviously, that one there at Valero, he was fifth after 36 holes at the Players and then shot 76 or something like that. He was seventh after 54 at Corrales as well. So there's been some really good stuff, just not quite putting it all together for all four rounds. But
I know what he's done. I know what he's done wrong. He's followed the Rory McIlroy strategy. Eject early from the tournaments, remove all the pressure, and then play like the best golfer in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, the win pressure is removed immediately.
Absolutely.
Poor Charlie.
He'd be such a
popular winner.
He would be. Couple of top tens here.
He's come close in the past in this. He's gone out in final groups or second last groups on Sundays and ejected slightly. But he can play around here, Hoffman.
Undoubtedly. Was it 2013, I think it was, where he was leading. Going into the final day, then shot another one of these mad final rounds, 76, 77, something like that. He shot to take himself right out of it. But he's also
won at El Chameleon, hasn't he?
Yep.
That coastal track over in Mexico.
I thought it was plenty to like at 60s, I must say.
If you're going to start talking about last 36, last 54 holes, why not, eh? Last 36 holes at the Masters, Hideki Matsuyama and John Rahm were tied, 138 shots apiece. Kevin Na was only three off the pace there, shot 141, so three back of Hideki Matsuyama, over the weekend at the Masters. He tied with Will Zalatoris, Phil Mickelson, of all people. So Na's playing some great stuff. Robert McIntyre, he was tied. He was only three shots back of Hideki Matsuyama's last 54-hole total at the Masters. So McIntyre's playing some great stuff as well. Any more for you, Barry?
No, I might jump on a first round leader or two, but no, I'm happy with where things are at. There's no point in giving extra money to the bookies when you've already picked the winners, right?
That's what I like. Confidence, Barry.
I like our picks this week. I'm feeling good about it. Let's just leave last week in the past. It was a bit of a miss. But I think it was a bit of a miss for a lot of people, just the way it went.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. I'm not seeing many Hideki tickets flying about. So, one for the bookies and we'll get in this week.
Exactly.
My fade of the week.
Uh-oh.
Second week on the trot. Has to be Dustin Johnson.
That feels too obvious.
Well, it does.
But yeah.
He's favourite, so he's not. You can't. You're making.
Yeah,
an opinion,
yeah. It's just. Yeah, it's not gonna.
Is it just the RBC sponsorship that really drags him along to this? Do you think?
Well, he's from the state as well, isn't he? South Carolina boy, but I think he's actually led here after 54 holes. There's something. I was asking you boys in the podcast just after in January whether we were entering a Dustin Johnson era. And I think the answer to that at the moment is clearly no. There are players out there that I think it's got to the stage now, hasn't it? World golf, where there's so many good players. It's very, very difficult to get in a period of total domination.
Yeah. I just don't think there's any... There's nobody like that anymore. That was a Tiger thing. And, you know, it's just... We can't compare anybody to Tiger, really.
He had been playing some outstanding stuff, DJ, but he's not.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though. We're getting 12-1 now at the RBC Heritage with Unibet on Dustin Johnson. So if the form continues to wane, you know, you could be seeing something along the lines of a 16-1 or maybe a 14-16s for the PGA. Getting a bit juicier at that stage. My transatlantic double nomination is one of two. I'm going Kevin Kisner.
I'm good with that.
I'm only doing it to scupper your bet, Barry. But
oh, thanks, Steve. Well, look, one of these times you might actually be wrong in trying to kill me or something, and it works out. So, you know, hopefully it's this week. Yeah. So we've got Kisner at juicy
odds.
He's
got a great chance, I think, Kevin Kisner. I really do. I think that's us, boys. I think that's us, gentlemen, for the week, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we've muttered on for far too long. Apologies to the listeners. So, thanks for your time. I hope your bets go well.
Yeah, best of luck, guys.
Good luck, everybody.
And best of luck to you listeners. We'll be back next week. It's a weird one next week, isn't it? Because I'm not covering the team event on the PGA Tour, and you've got the European Tour event down in...
Yeah, Gran Canaria, this one, yeah. So we'll
cover that off with the podcast next week.
Yeah, we'll have a short and sweet run through of the Gran Canaria Open next week.
Thanks for listening. As ever, 5-star reviews, very, very important. Keep them coming, and we'll see you again next week. Goodbye.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf.